X Power Hour with your hosts, Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell.
Welcome to another edition of RX Power Hour on RXMuscle.com. I'm your host, Nathan Payton. I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Bracewell. Ryan, how are you this evening?
Man, I'm doing awesome. Earlier today, just got back from the doctor with my wife and got to hear my I guess you call it, baby's heartbeat for the first time. Got to see little little pictures that they do. And first time it actually looks like something because she's right about 3 months. So it's pretty awesome. Having a good day.
Oh, that's amazing. Did you happen to see like an Atlas Stone series, any kind of practice implements in there, or what do we got going on as far as training?
Doesn't look like so yet, but the one thing, I think I might be having a girl now. I was all set thinking it was going to be a boy, but according to these wives' tales, if the heart beats over like 150 per minute, it's going to be a girl, and it was 160, so I guess I better start shining the guns.
Exactly, yeah. I've got a whole cabinet over here at my house for that exact same reason with a teenager. Very good. Well, Ryan, I think the first and most important thing that I need to do is basically catch our listeners up to speed on what we've been up to since the last show. First off, I want to thank everybody for the positive feedback that we've received on the show. That kind of motivated Ryan and myself to really kind of lock ourselves away this week. And, I'll be honest with you, we put in countless hours of research going over additional training methods, and I know we were really basically especially focused on perfect form. That was going to be the theme for this week's show. It was really during this research that we happened to stumble across, frankly, what we feel is the indeed absolute perfect form. We found the Larissa Race training video that was in the Iron Asylum where she's doing leg training. So that's kind of where we've spent most of our time this past week. And it was basically through that research that enabled us to come up with kind of the following conclusions. Again, with the theme being perfect form, kind of training methods and things along those lines. Number one, the conclusion with Larissa is Larissa has amazing form. We couldn't find any flaw in Larissa's form. So we'd like to get that out there that she has amazing form. B, Larissa looks much better training legs than myself or any of the strongman or powerlifting guys that we have in the gym do. That was a fact. Neither one of us could find a reason to argue with that. And lastly, and probably most disturbingly, was that if Bracewell happened to wear a similar outfit that Larissa's wearing in that video, I'm pretty sure that the deadlift suit was going to get in the way, but I guess that's a problem that Ryan will just have to fix on his own.
Man, I thought I'd look pretty good in that outfit, but that's just me. Nothing sexier than a 300-pound man showing it off.
I think that's one of those outfits that the outfit wears you. I'm not really sure you wear the outfit.
That's right.
Well, Ryan, why don't you go ahead and listen to me rant for a little bit. And you may have to plug your ears because this is something you've been involved in.
I have a feeling I know what's coming.
Basically, I wrote an article for RX Muscle this week over the issues revolving around hypoglycemia. It's an issue that comes up constantly whenever I take on a new client. I'd say 75% of the time, maybe even closer to 80, when I take on a new strongman or powerlifting client, the first thing I have to clean up, for lack of a better term, is a client's issue with hypoglycemia. I mean, you're talking about 300-pound men who are used to eating whatever, whenever they feel like. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That method has worked for them, and these are some very strong individuals. However, these are individuals who are coming to me to take another step beyond what they've been able to achieve on their own. So that kind of spurred a whole other tale, if you will, as a heated debate ensued regarding the benefits of clean eating, low carbs, no carbs, kind of, the same old thing that goes around a little bit in bodybuilding circles, but it seemed to break out, for lack of a better term, for the first time in the powerlifting and strongman circles. With that, and I'll call out the individual, Mr. Pro Strongman Dan Harrison himself, he Dan, is definitely not a believer in the clean eating type of approach. However, it is going to be my personal task to make him a convert at some point down the line. And basically, the main argument seemed to stem from not that there's not clear benefits from eating healthy and eating clean. However, the whole hypoglycemia, the managing blood sugar, you know, feeling tired after you knock down the Old Country Buffet for an hour and a half, that doesn't necessarily have to be a normal way of life. And the benefits around that. So that's kind of what's burning on my mind. And that article that I wrote for RX was literally came from those discussions that I had with Dan and that Ryan was even privy in on, as we both kind of jockeyed back and forth to make our point. And I think one of the main things that seem to keep popping up is the diet that Ryan is on right now, where Ryan, in an average day, consumes less than 140 carbs a day. Half of those are split between before and after workout. So he's basically existing on, you know, a for lack of a better term, a Palumbo-esque existence, you know, during the daytime hours where his carbs are definitely very, very low. Now, with that, the arguments came up repeatedly as far as the lifters would pass out or, you know, you can't train without carbs, you can't lift heavy without carbs, you won't have the endurance without carbs. You know, without a dozen donuts, you're screwed. So, Ryan, kind of, you know, can we go ahead and tell the listeners how many times you've passed out and we've had to call the EMTs because you basically are following a low-carb diet at this point?
Every day. Every workout I have to call them. No. I think the only time I've ever had an issue, and I don't even think it was the hypoglycemia issue, it was just because I'm so used to doing, you know, five reps on stuff or, you know, maybe a stone series, which still only takes 30 seconds, when some genius trainer decides to put me on a drop set of leg press, which I don't think I've done it since I was in college, and that made me want to vomit. I felt like crap after that, but it wasn't hypoglycemia. It was my body saying, I hate you. So, you know, when I'm used to doing 30 seconds or 60 seconds worth of work and have to go through 3 or 4 minutes worth of work, I think that's going to screw you up a little bit more than the diet will.
Yeah, hypoglycemia is something that's common and it shouldn't be common. And somewhere along the lines, in, I guess, public opinion, people just accept that. Oh, well, I haven't eaten, or oh, I missed lunch. That's why I'm shaky, or that's why I can't think, or that's why my head's foggy, or, you know, that's why after sex I can't function. No, it really shouldn't be like that. You know, food is something that's basically supposed to give us energy. If it's not, something's wrong. In a diet like Dave's, or, you know, the various other, you know, low-carb type approaches that may exist out there, even though I think Dave's is the best out of that type, there's definitely, if you just try it, your mind opens up. It's not as clear-cut as, oh, well, that couldn't possibly work, or, oh, I'll feel like crap. There's always an adjustment phase, but your body does adapt. You know, we were not designed to freaking run around and capture Twinkies while we're hunting woolly mammoths on the plane. So, you know, our bodies were designed to use fat for fuel. You have to remind it how. It forgets along the way because of how we basically abused it, and you can get yourself streamlined. And I think that the point that I was trying to make with that article on RX is that oftentimes, you know, hypoglycemia is your very first warning sign that things are not right. Not even talking from a performance standpoint or with athletes, but or bodybuilding goals or anything along those lines. But things are not right health-wise. If you suffer from low blood sugar, if you have a fallout, if, you know, you're spazzing, you got to get to the Snickers in the snack machine there at work, your diet sucks, and you need to face that reality. That's not normal human body reaction. Unless you have 0% body fat, folks, anytime you need a little bit of pick-me-up or anytime it's been a little extended period of time since you've eaten, your body should be able to seamlessly tap body fat for fuel. You never even know it happened. All you are is that you're aware that, hey, wow, I haven't eaten since, you know, 5 hours ago, 6 hours ago, whatever the case may be. But you shouldn't have any drop-off in who you are, you know. And unfortunately, I think it's never going to get through to people's heads until it really has an effect on their life. And it's definitely just a misconception that it's the way that we are, and that nothing could be further from the truth. It's a reality sign that things are not right. You need to address it and take a look at your diet.
Well, and let's be clear on something. You're not saying that by having a diet like this that you can't be strong. You're saying it's not necessarily healthy, is what you're trying to get clear. Because you can be strong on donuts and chocolate milk, because there's a lot of guys out there that do it. But to be strong and healthy, you got to learn to fix things.
Absolutely. And what I'm saying is that, along those lines, is that when you have hypoglycemia, it's your body's way of telling you that you're not 100%. Shit, maybe it means you're 95%. But guess what? In the sport of strongman or powerlifting, if you're not 100%, you know, it means a paycheck or no paycheck, or it means a pro card or no pro card. You know, there's a lot at stake. And when you're talking about the caliber of athletes that all you guys are and all powerlifters are, that extra 1% or 2%, if you think you don't need that, that's arrogance and ego. And one of these days, an ego check will occur, because that's just how it is. There's no athlete that can ever afford to perform at any less than 100% if they take that sport seriously.
Well, I do have some info on some guys that have been performing at 100% for sure. There was several world records that took place in the past past week or so. One of them I actually got to see in person. It was at Misha Ortmeier's birthday party. Kid's 1 year old. And as Travis was talking about on the show last week, I saw him do his little stone load in the middle of the living room, loading like 2 5-pound medicine balls onto boxes that are about two feet tall, which you got to remember, he's about 2 feet tall and only started walking two maybe 3 months ago.
Right.
And he actually had a 10-pound ball up as high as he needed to go to load it, and then all of a sudden he got distracted by his brand-new four-wheeler and decided to let that fall to the ground. And you know, on some serious numbers, we also had several pretty cool things going on last week at the Giants Live in Istanbul. Zdrina Savickas broke the all-time world record for the axle clean and press, did an amazing 215 kilos, which is, you know, for us Americans, is 473 pounds.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, it's very amazing. And the interesting thing about it is Colin Bryce was there. He's the one who runs Giant Live, and also he's a judge for World's Strongest Man. He was quoted in saying that he's pretty sure Zdrunas could do 500 in a contest if there was somebody else out there who could push him to it. You know, because Zdrunas is the type of guy, he does what he has to do to win, and that's it, for the most part. Not saying he never does the extra mile, but, you know, he's going to do what he needs to win, so if he has to do 500 to win, he'll do it. And I'm pretty sure he probably could, because he's got some sick overheads. And on the smaller guy's side, which I think this is just as amazing, in powerlifting, Joe Mazza, who's pretty much a legend in 165-pound weight class, he already holds the world record in the shirted bench press with 705 pounds. You know, you got to remember, he's 165 pounds, you know, smaller than you are, and benching 705. And he just broke a 27-year-old raw record with 487. So the guy's 165 pounds and out benches me raw by like 30 or 40 pounds or even more. So I thought that was pretty amazing.
Oh, well, absolutely.
And kind of while we're on that powerlifting mode, I guess, not that anyone necessarily cares, but I was going to tell you that I actually signed up for my first powerlifting meet this week. I'm going to be doing an APF meet in Beaumont on December 11th, somewhere right around there. And I'm going to go for all four of the 308 raw records. It's not a raw meet, but, you know, the records for my weight class actually seem pretty low, so I think if I have a pretty good day, I could, at the very minimum, I think I can set two of the records, and I think I'm pretty close on the bench press, so it could be pretty cool to, you know, go to my first meet and walk away with several records. And I think
that's how
actually
you're supposed to do it.
Go ahead.
That's how you're supposed to do it, man.
Well, that's right. You just walk in
go
there and
right
own
in.
It.
You're a pro strongman. You just walk right in there and get your record.
Yeah, I don't know about all that. It's a totally different ball game when you're doing something like powerlifting. I mean, you still got to be strong, but you got to know how to work the meet. It's kind of like being a strongman and knowing when to eat your food at the in between events so you don't puke on the next event.
Correct.
But I think, you know, our guest tonight that we have coming up after the break can be very beneficial for what I'm doing, you know, coming up. I don't know if I'll be able to utilize his techniques for this coming meet because it's so close. You know, I'm only 3 or 4 weeks out now. But, you know, if I decide to do a raw powerlifting meet in the future and, you know, and I'm kind of off-season for strongman, I think the advice he's going to give us on how to modify a West Side program for raw lifters could be very beneficial.
Oh, I agree. The West Side program, definitely, there's so much confusion on that I'm very excited to have Chris on here and clear up a lot of myths, too, that I know definitely revolve around that sport, especially with the use of, you know, a juiced-up lifter or, you know, or a natural guy and things along those lines, too. So,
definitely. Well, I guess don't waste any more time. We'll catch our break, and when we come back, we'll be back with Chris Mason from wannabebig.com.
This is the RX Power Hour. Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the species line of products champion original thinking, and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit speciesnutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Now back to the RX Power Hour. All right, and we're back from the break. Got our first guest for the night. The guest is going to be Chris Mason. For those of y'all out there who don't know who Chris is, he is the owner of At Large Nutrition and WannabeBig.com. He's also been a power lifter for 23 years, almost longer than I've been alive, actually, and is a personal friend of Louis Simmons, trains with him whenever he gets a chance, and will be helping Louis actually write a nutritional chapter in his new book. Chris is going to be on tonight, like we discussed before, to help us figure out what modifications need to be done to the West Side style of training for the lifters who are lifting raw. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Hey, Chris, I know we just want to kind of jump in because there's a lot of material that we need to cover. And basically the first thing that I know that Ryan and I both wanted to go over is there's a lot of people out there who believe that this style of training is only going to work for enhanced lifters. And basically, I'm just going to put you on the spot. I mean, do you believe this is true? And if so, why?
Well, no. Cut to the chase. I don't believe it's true. And I can say it factually because I know guys that are clean and practice the West Side Protocol and do very well. In fact, one of the guys that works with us by the name of Travis Bell, he's a bench-only guy, but he trains up at West Side and follows their protocol, and the guy's as clean as the day is long and is a very good lifter. I mean, the guy's got a shirted press of, I want to say in competition, mid like 750, and he's good for about 8 right now, and I need to do it in competition for it to be legit, but... And he's got well over a 500 raw bench, and this is a guy that's clean, weighs in the 260, 265 range. And so anyway, he's living proof, or at least one shining example, that you certainly don't need to be enhanced. And the thing about West Side training is, I think the reason that myth or that idea gets perpetuated is because people will say, well, you burn out with these ME days. I don't know, for anybody who's not overly familiar with West Side in your audience, basically there's four main training days. There's a what you call a bench day and a squat day, and you might really kind of also characterize those as upper and lower. And you have and for each of those, so those are 2 days a week, and then each of those have two training days. One's called an ME or maximum effort day, and one's called a DE or dynamic effort day. The DE work is basically what is also called speed work. And we can get into that in a little bit, but the ME days are just what it sounds like, maximum effort. It's an appropriate name. You warm up, you pick a bench, let's say it's the bench day, you pick a bench variation, and that could be floor press, that could be, you know, board press, that could be reverse band press, that could be any number of variations. Very rarely the actual, I won't say very rarely, but rarely, the actual bench itself, but they'll pick a variation of the bench press, and they'll warm up, and they'll warm up to a one rep max attempt, and they'll try to set a PR. Now, they're not necessarily going to hit a PR every time they do it, but they try, and they hit a PR, if you will, for that, or they hit their one rep max best for that day, whatever it may be. And the idea is, people say, oh, well, I get burned out on this kind of training, because if I train, heavy like that every week without some sort of periodization cycling type thing, I overtrain. And what that tells me is basically the lifters, a couple different things. A, don't truly follow the program as it's written, so to speak, or at least the template as it's created. And B, don't do enough supporting work, conditioning work, to be able to tolerate the training. You can train with an ME, a maximum effort, especially with another big kind of portion or part of Westside is what's called conjugate variety. And what conjugate variety is, as I was just kind of giving example, like on that bench day, they don't bench press every week. They're going to do a variation of the bench press every week. And they literally change exercises for ME day every single week. And so what happens is that precludes overtraining. When you're training at a high intensity, and I'm going to be quiet here in a second when we'll continue, but at high intensity, which is defined in the weightlifting style, which is as a percentage of your one repetition maximum. So by definition, an ME day is 100% intensity, right, because you're going for a one repetition maximum. So when you're training at that high of a level of intensity, it's going to fry your nervous system if you repeatedly practice the same movement. In fact, I mean, there were studies done. A lot of what Louis based his system on come from the Russian and Bulgarian weightlifting teams of yesteryear when they were super successful and they're scientists and whatnot. And he's just, he's read voraciously pretty much all the information written by these scientists. And nutshell is, they find that there's essentially a loss of coordination. If you do a 100% intensity effort and you do it for 3 weeks in a row, you essentially lose coordination, which means your nervous system starts failing, and then you actually get weaker at the lift, and you also increase your chances of getting injured. So that was the impetus for this conjugate variety. So I kind of gave you a lot of background there, but the nutshell being, if you properly practice Westside and you're a clean guy, you can certainly handle the volume and the style of training. Now, of course, enhancement, like it does in all forms of training, makes it better, right? But you can train that way, and you can make fantastic progress without using any sort of tissue-building drugs.
Now, Chris, I mean, when you were talking about the max effort day, primarily, I mean, all you were talking about is one rep maxes. Do you incorporate whether you're geared or raw, do you incorporate any of the 3 or 5 rep maxes, or do you?
Yeah, and you know what, the guys at Westside, like, again, you got the template, then you got what they're constantly experimenting. So yeah, they will, like, and it depends on the movement. Like on the squat day, a good morning is a squat variation they'll employ for their squat day, right? For their ME squat day, and they will rarely do single rep good mornings. They're probably going to do 3s on the good mornings, maybe 5s, but typically 3s. They're also going to, Louis will also tweak it depending on who the athlete is and what they're going for. If it's a power lifter, it's one thing. If it's a strong man, it's another. If it's a, football player, it's yet another. The template doesn't vary much, but how it's addressed might vary individually like that. So to answer your question, the Westside guys proper, when they're training, they're not going to do too many multi-repetition on their ME days, but every once in a while they will.
Well, Chris, speaking of the dynamic effort, what about using the repetition days instead of the dynamic effort?
Yeah, and well, they have another method called the repetition, the method of repetition, and that's something that they do incorporate, and that's something you could do. Louis is a big advocate of the speed training. He truly feels that it translates to maximum effort lifting. In other words, he feels that when you're training, they use what's called a pendulum wave on their squat portion of their DE days. And that's basically 1 week you're going to squat with 50% bar load. In other words, whatever your one rep max is on that particular squat variation. And they use a box squat almost invariably for their DE days on the squats. So they're going to use a box squat with varying types of what's called accommodating resistance, or bands or chains. But the bar load, forget the bands or chains, the bar load is going to be 50% the first week, 55% the second week, and 60% the third week. And they're going to do 10 sets of doubles the first 2 weeks, and then 12 sets of doubles. I lied, other way around. It's going to be 10 sets of doubles, 12 sets of doubles, and then 10 sets of doubles on the 60% week. So in other words, what you get there is that's that pendulum wave. You get a form of periodization because the volume is periodized. In other words, as you're varying the percentage, your training volume is going to without sounding really redundant here, vary. It's going to go up or down depending on the percentages and the number of sets that you're doing. So that's another form of periodization that's built into Westside. And the same thing with conjugate variety on the maximum effort days. You get built-in periodization of volume by virtue of the fact that different movements are going to have different maximum lifts, so you're going to be using different loads, which means, by definition, your training volume is going to vary. So that's something that people don't realize, and that's a big part of those speed days is that variation in volume, that periodization of volume. But so to get back, he's really big on the speed days for that reason, and also because the explosive speed he feels truly translates into your one rep max, makes you able to accelerate that really heavy load much more aggressively, faster, in other words.
Okay, so it really sounds like a lot of people, it's not so much that, or at least from what we've covered already, the reason a lot of people think that you can't do Westside Raw is really because they're not doing it correctly. They're not doing the template itself correctly.
Yeah, I mean, basically they're bastardizing it. They read something, and what a lot of people do, what I see out there a lot, people take portions of Westside, apply it to their training, but they don't do the system in its entirety, and then they say, oh, I overtrained on it or whatever. But that's because they were doing the wrong things otherwise. See, on both maximum effort and dynamic effort days, they'll follow up with what are called special exercises or assistance work, basically. And they'll choose exercises that work your weaknesses. And for those exercises, they're going to do repetition work, typically 10 to 20 repetitions. Like, for example, triceps for the bench. Louis is huge on triceps. And which, by the way, this is another kind of to address this whole question about the raw versus geared. You know, a lot of guys say, well, you know what, all this triceps work, it doesn't translate as well into raw powerlifting because with the shirt, you need the triceps because the shirt's going to do the work off the chest. You just need to be able to lock it out. And while that's true, your triceps are a huge prime mover in the benching movement. You know, trust me, increase the strength of your triceps, your bench is going to go up. You know,
oh, I completely agree with that one. I do that all the time when I'm benching. I'll almost, you know, and I'm a raw bencher, I almost stall out halfway up, but then through tricep strength, it just keeps going.
Yeah, and it was, God, who the hell was it that Louis was telling me that told him about, kind of turned him on that in the first place? I think it was Pacifico. I think it was Larry Pacifico, but I won't swear to it. But, you know, what's great about Louis is, you know, he's been around the game for so long. He's known or trained with or competed against, you know, every great powerlifter there ever was. And the guy's smart enough that if somebody else is doing something and it works, he does it, you know, or he'll try it at least. And that's the beauty of Westside, by the way. It's always morphing. Westside today is not what Westside was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. They constantly try new things, and when they find something that works, they incorporate it. Like, I'll give you a great example. They do these timed squats. Okay, they'll put 225, 315 on their back with a safety squat bar, and they'll squat with it for 3 to 5 minutes, continuous. Now, it's not what it sounds like in the sense you're not doing continuous reps. You do a rep, they're going to do this on a box. A lot of times they'll put foam on the box, all sorts of crazy things. But they're going to stand up, they're going to sit down, stand up, might wait 10 seconds, do another rep. Stand up, maybe wait 15 seconds, do another rep. But they have that load on the shoulders for 3 to 5 minutes. And it's an amazing, if you try it sometime, it gives you an absolute amazing pump in your upper body, believe it or not. You just get jacked out of your mind, your traps, your entire back, because you're supporting this load on your back the entire time. And it's just another way that, you know, Louis has found helps out their overall training regimen. It also gives you a certain conditioning aspect. So he's always looking for those angles. But I don't want to digress too much, so I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. Go ahead, Nathan.
Yeah, Chris, in referencing the speed work real quick before I forget, the bands, you know, going ahead and using bands off the deadlift platform, you know, a lot of guys, in my opinion, seem to have that concept completely, well, you already mentioned bastardized, but I'll say it, bastardized, in the sense that they'll strap themselves to the platform and just yank away endlessly. They seem to be missing the concept as far as it's speed work. It's not just get on there and yank with resistance. Can you kind of clarify that?
Yeah, well, you know, again, speed work is always going to be sets, multiple sets with light bar loads, relatively speaking, and depending on what you're doing, 2 to 3 reps. So like on the deadlift, they might do speed work, they might do 10 sets of three, or they might do 15 sets of singles even sometimes. So they're going to vary it up. They're going to do high volume in the number of sets, low repetition. And, yeah, you're right. So they're not loading up a lot of weight. They want a weight that they can just blow the hell out of it and explosively yank that thing up. And, you know, again, the bands help you because they work. They do a lot of – actually, a lot of their band work for speed work is going to be out of the rack too. They love doing the speed pulls out of the rack off of, probably 2-3-4-inch pin. And they'll jack up some serious band tension on that thing, and they'll do, again, you know, 10 sets of the doubles or 10 sets of triples, 12 sets, depending on what they feel like and on a given day. And they'll usually do that as a chase-up behind their squat work. And so, for example, they might do that even off on an ME day after the ME work. They might go in there and do some speed pulls, as an example. So they do a lot. That's one other thing I misnomer about Westside, that they don't do much deadlifting. They actually do a pretty fair amount of deadlifting. They don't do a lot of straight pulling from the floor for low repetitions. They will incorporate that, but they, again, it's all about the variety. It's all about essentially special exercises. And another thing about conjugate variety, when it's constantly switching up the exercises for your ME day, is that it addresses weaknesses. And this is something else I think a lot of people don't consider. In other words, you take pretty much all these other programs, they're going to squat all the time. Well, if you have a certain weakness in your squat and all you ever do is squat, it's always going to be the Achilles heel. It's always going to be the weak link in the chain. Conversely, let's say it's your glutes or your hams, or let's say it's your lower back, and you're mixing in every week, so every third or fourth week you're doing a good morning, or every third or fourth week you're doing a heavy rack pull. All of a sudden, you're going to start addressing that weakness, and all of a sudden, your squat's going to start shooting up. So that's another beauty of Westside, and that's true whether you're raw or you're geared. Everybody's got a weakness. Now, weaknesses can change with the gear, but no matter what, you're always going to have a weakness. So it really helps address weaknesses, and that's another major plus. It's the fact that you do ME days every week at that 100% intensity level, and like Louis says, and it's the flat-out immutable truth, he who trains the heaviest most often is the strongest, period. The more often you can train heavy, the stronger you're going to be. And when you say the more often you can train heavy, that means in progress at it. And with his system, you can do it literally week in, week out. And if you practice Westside, you're a guy that literally could compete basically any day of the week. Like Louis uses this great, analogy or story when he's at his certifications that he does. He'll talk about, like a fight. It's not like you're going to, you don't get this chance. You've got to go get in a, you're walking down the street and some guy comes up and wants to mug you or wants to fight you. You don't have a chance to say, well, look, I'm periodizing right now. I'm in my down cycle. You're going to have to, can you come back and see me in a month? Their guys are always ready to fight. They're ready to go, and they're ready to lift against you any time. Like, I go up, you guys mentioned the intro. I go up and a lot of times Louis and I will pull. That's my particularly good lift, and Louis, he just likes, he's a competitive son of a, he's the most competitive man I've ever met. And so, I go up there, and he and I will pull together. And it doesn't matter what training day, what he was supposed to do, he can just pull heavy that day and do it. So, and the guy's 62 years old, so there you go.
Gotcha. Now, Chris, it's obvious, from everything we've already discussed, the template, like we already said, doesn't change. But do you need to change anything as far as, like, I've heard some people say you should change your squat stance. I know, the geared guys are almost always going to go wide. And I've heard, I thought it was Dave Tate, maybe Louie in a video, say that if you're doing, raw lifting, you want to stick to a more of a medium or even a closer stance. Does that apply to, do you agree with that, or is there anything similar to that?
No, not really, and I'll say 100% it wasn't Louie, trust me, because he's all about the wide stance, raw or not. His firm belief is the wide stance builds the narrow, and it doesn't work the other way around. And also the wider stance is the more powerful stance. But, I think that's a misnomer or a myth. There is one thing that you should do with squatting, in my opinion, and I don't even know if Lou would agree with me on this, but from what I've seen with these CrossFitters that we work with, of course, they're all training raw. They're not geared at all. And that is that you should incorporate a straight squat, a regular standard squat, into your conjugate variety every third or fourth week if you're going to train raw, as opposed to the Westside template, which within Westside, they might not do a regular squat period, until the day of the meet. I mean, Louis did, he tells the story of, in all of his, you know, training and certifications where, you know, I think it was 9 years. He hadn't squatted 9 years or something there, and he went into a meet because he had broken his back and some other stuff. So, but anyway, he hadn't done a regular squat in 9 years, and he goes in a meet and he sets a personal, like, 900 and something pounds PR. So, you know, it's one of those, and that was back when 900 was a hell of a squat. So, you know, when you're geared, a squat suit is almost like a box. In other words, literally a squat suit will stop you at the bottom almost like a box will. So in that sense, when you're competing as a geared lifter, a multiply lifter especially, you don't have to take any straight squats, and you can go right into a meet and straight squat and set a PR. If you're a raw lifter, I firmly believe you have to mix in a regular squat, at least, like I said, every 3 or 4 weeks, no more than 4 weeks. And that's because if you don't, you're going to get detrained in the hole to some degree. Because box squatting, the way most people do it, proper box squatting will build your strength in the hole, but very few people do it right. You have to go slightly below parallel. You have to get a nice pause on the box to kind of build you in the hole. But even that said, if you're a raw squatter and you don't do some raw squatting within your template, your raw squat will not progress like it should. Conversely, if you mix it in every 3 to 4 weeks, you're not going to detrain that movement, and you're going to strengthen yourself otherwise, and then you're going to optimize your performance. So that, to me, the stance doesn't matter. You can squat wide, you can squat narrow, whether you're raw or not. Louis would always tell you to squat wide. You know, some people, everybody's different. Everybody's anatomy is different, and everybody has variations in their physiology in the sense of, you know, muscle groups that are stronger than others. So there's some really, really good squatters there that are narrow stance squatters, especially what they call back squatters. You'll see pictures of guys that are, you know, almost good morning the weight up, and a lot of times they'll use a fairly narrow stance because it's, you know, the quads are relatively weak, but they use that back to kind of lever themselves up. And not necessarily the quads, but maybe the glutes and the hams. Whereas these, you know, the wide stance people, that's your glutes, hams, that's your posterior chain that's strong. So,
Chris, with the squat, yeah, with the squats, do you still recommend, even pulling the chest back into this, do you still recommend bands for upper and lower?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, bands are, to me, one of the best training tools you can have. Fred Hatfield, what the hell do you call it? Compensatory acceleration, I think, is what he termed it. And basically, Fred Hatfield talked about this years ago, and the band just takes this idea to the next level. What he would talk about in his training, everybody knows who Fred Hatfield is, one of the first guys to squat 1,000 pounds, etc. Fred, what he would do is he didn't have bands or anything, but he's squatting, or whatever he's doing, he's trying to accelerate that through the movement. He's trying to accelerate the barbell as fast as he can all the way through the movement, and the idea was, because obviously like in a barbell squat, as you stand up, because of leverage factors, the load gets relatively lighter and lighter. In other words, you can lock out a hell of a lot more than you can squat out of the hole, right? So the load gets light as you stand up with it, in a relative sense. So to fight that weakness, if you will, of the barbell in physics, he would try to accelerate faster and faster as the load got relatively light, and therefore still producing a lot of force. And so essentially making each repetition more efficient. Well, a band just takes that to the next level. With a band, if you think about it, it's kind of obvious, I guess, but a band is essentially a giant rubber band. Well, when you squat down the hole, the resistance is going to be the least. As you're standing up with it, as your leverage would normally make you stronger and stronger, the band is starting to kick in with greater and greater resistance, and so you still have to press with as much force. It kind of makes the degree of force required almost constant throughout the entire range of motion. And that makes the repetition way more efficient. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely.
And it does it for everything. And it trains lockout strength for benching. It trains lockout strength for squatting. And it just, again, it makes you push through the entire range of motion. And it makes such a difference. If you squat with bands and then you switch back to squatting without bands, you know, you feel like a Superman because, A, you know, it's like, you squat with bands and you're squatting 800, 900 pounds on your back, if you're, depending on, you know, 1,000, depending on what you're wearing, and you get rid of those bands, that same load, the bar load on your back, and that all of a sudden feels magically lighter, and it just feels like you can just blow through the range of motion. It really makes a difference.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think that's about all the time we're going to have tonight, Chris, but it's obvious, you know, this is a pretty extensive topic. So, you know, if you're willing, I think we'll have to have you back on to maybe go in more in depth on, I guess you'd maybe even split it up just upper and lower days to get a little more detail for some of our listeners that, you know, don't know as much about West Side, you know, to give them a little more detail. Is there any articles that maybe you've written on this topic or e-books or anything like that that you would recommend?
I'd always reference people to Louie because he's the true master on that end. So if you go to Westside Barbell, and it's Westside, WESTSIDE-barbell.com, you can for free, all the articles, not all of them, but most of the articles he's ever written for Powerlifting USA Magazine, which he writes an article every month, are published on his website. They're PDFs. You can download them for free. Of course, his books, the best book for anybody that's not familiar with it is called The Book of Methods. I sell it at my site as well, which is www.atlargenutrition.com, but you can get it either West Side or my site. That book is, I think, a must-have for anybody that's interested in optimizing their strength or athletic performance. It's great. I think it's like $50 or something, but it's a hell of an investment, and it's a lot of information, and anybody that would get that would have a real good understanding of the program. And I would say, if you don't mind my chiming in, you know, anybody, if they appreciate this conversation we had this evening, I do sell supplements, so please feel free to check out our website. And we have some of the best supplements out there. You know, we've been really lucky. Men's Health Magazine has recommended our products several times. In fact, we're in the current issue right now, Best Protein for Men, Nitrine. So I won't go any further about that, but I'd appreciate that. And I appreciate you guys having me on, and I'd love to come back.
Awesome.
Absolutely, Chris.
Really
thanks for being on.
Coming on tonight.
All right. You guys have a great
night,
evening.
Man.
You too. Thanks, Chris.
Uh-huh. Bye now.
And we'll be back shortly with our next guest, Dion Wessels, president of NASS, which is the only amateur strongman federation in the United States, as well as the president of American Strongman Corporation for all of us pros. Be back quick.
This is the RX Power Hour. Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit speciesnutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RXMuscle.com.
Now back to the RX Power Hour.
All right, we're back with our next guest, Dion Wessels, the almighty queen of the strongman world. Dion, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing very well.
Wonderful.
Bracewell's always wonderful. You know that.
Exactly.
He's like the world's biggest Care Bear.
Yeah.
That's how all of us strong men are. Just big dumb animals.
Miss Dion, this is a big week for you. You're heading into nationals. I understand you've got a little trip ahead of you.
Yeah.
Kind of, why don't you go ahead and bring us up to speed on nationals and the last pro card offering for the gentlemen this year?
The last pro card, I would like to be able to say the last show of the year. but it's the last big show of the year. Then we can start getting ready for next season, next year. But about 145 to 150 athletes competing, and we're adding women this year, so it should be a big event out in Reno, Nevada. So people out there, come out, show your support, cheer on your favorite athlete.
Outstanding, Dion. What events are we looking at?
Well, we want to have, we got a new equipment sponsor this year, so we want to have like a, the sled, not a sled drag with a keg medley. We also want to have a frame carry. They'll have the traditional yoke walk, the Atlas Stones, which is also one of the traditional events. And one thing we're doing different this year that I don't think we've done at any nationals is we're going to have the axle press this year. Normally it's a log press or something of that nature, but we'll have the actual axle press for reps along with the giant dumbbell press.
Nice. How heavy are the guys going on that axle press for the heavyweights?
I believe they're going to be doing around 320, 300, something of that nature.
Nice. Big press.
Dion, for some of the people who aren't familiar with the American strongman stuff, you know, everybody who likes strongman or has seen it, they know Worlds. But to give them a little bit of a comparison, I know at Worlds the guys are, you know, their Stone series, for example, is going to run, you know, maybe like 240s, 250s, up to maybe, I think the heaviest they do is 380.
Yeah,
what kind of Stone series are you looking at with your contests?
The Stone series that the guys here will be looking at, they'll start at with a 300-pound stone, and their heaviest stone will go up to 420 pounds. So one of the big differences are the weights are generally heavier as opposed to what you see at World's Strongest Man.
Definitely. Are there any favorites? You know, a lot of guys. I mean, I've been to several of the pro-ams this year. Was fortunate enough to get my card at the Orlando pro-am, and also got to help judge in Dallas. Are there some of the guys coming out that have been to those shows that you expect to do pretty well in the lightweights and the heavyweights?
Yeah. Wow. In the lightweight division, one of the guys that I'm expected to do pretty well is Zach Nims. He's out of Washington. And Zach really hasn't been to any of the pro-ams, but last year he was runner-up, I believe, to Doug Madewell by like half a point or so. And he's been pretty solid in the competitions that he competes in. He usually competes in the heavyweight division, even though he only weighs, he weighs less than 230 pounds because he likes the heavier weights. So
my
I expect to see him doing pretty well as a lightweight. Gosh, other lightweights are Ty Roberts. I believe you might have saw him in Dallas. He's pretty solid. And then there's also Donnie Rhodes from California. So it's going to be, no one will run away with it. It will definitely be a battle.
Definitely.
And then in the heavyweight division, wow, we've got a lot of guys well over 300 pounds. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm thinking a super heavyweight in the top three. Like, all the top three I'm thinking are going to be super heavyweights from the list I saw.
I would say from the list that I saw, that your top three, your top five will be between super heavyweights, 300-pounders, and we may squeak a 265er in there, and that's a very short may.
Are you thinking of Pat Wilson for that 265?
Possibly Pat Wilson. Yeah, Pat Wilson is a contender. I mean, as long as Pat can keep his head together. Pat's young, and he hasn't been. This will be one of his first shows outside of Florida, so it will be interesting to see how he does on the road.
Gotcha.
But as far as being a strong competitor, by all means, absolutely. You know, you've also got two lightweight pros competing, which will Doug Madewell, who won the 231 last year, as well as Dave Mahalas, who was also the lightweight one America's Strongest Man 2 years ago. So they'll be contenders. Then you've also got Johnny Wasika, but I'm not sure how he, you know, he's coming back from a bicep injury. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. Generally, you know, he has a very strong grip and he's pretty fast. So that'll be interesting. Then in the 300-pound class, you've got Rob Lewis, and he's not a great overhead presser, but he's generally good with an axle, and he's very fast. Then there's Brad Archer. He made the top 10 at the Arnold last year, so he'll be someone to keep an eye on. And I would say, I mean, I'm sure there's some other ones that I'm overseeing, in the 300-pound division, but then, like, gosh, in your super heavyweights, wow. Do I really want to call a name? I mean, it's just going to be between, you got Jarrett Beakley, he's coming back. This will be his first big show since Nationals last year. I mean, he just did a show just to qualify. Then Eric Peterson, who did well at the Arnold. You've got also Alan Colley, who's been at, I believe, all the pro-ams except the Connecticut one.
Alan didn't do Connecticut, no.
Okay, he didn't do Connecticut. Okay, so Alan Colley, he's, you know, obviously I would assume that everybody out there is probably expecting him to win the yoke.
If he didn't win the yoke, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, I don't see anyone beating him. I think he'll surprise some people on some of the other events as well. So, I mean, his overhead is pretty solid. You know, his grip is the only one that he has generally had challenges with, but there's not really a turn, so he should do well. He should do pretty good. So, who are your picks, Brian?
And Dion, with the whole these guys, I mean, there's so many that you mentioned that you really look to do well and perform in the various classes. Can you go ahead and explain to folks who maybe aren't that familiar with strongman as far as the tie-in with the Arnold and what kind of transpires out of Nationals with these guys who perform?
Okay, well, the top 15 guys at Nationals, the overall points, they'll qualify for the Arnold Classic, which is last year we had the very first amateur world championships in strongman. And there were 20 countries represented last year. And I believe we've had 60 athletes, but I believe we ended up that actually competed after injuries, maybe about 58 athletes. I can't recall the exact number. And then this year, you know, we'll have the top 15 for Nationals, along with the overall lightweight pro, America's Strongest Man, the top three. Then the overall lightweight winner at Nationals, the winner from Dallas, Mike Caruso, and then we'll also have the other countries coming in. And this year, so far, we have 24 countries being represented. So it should be a pretty big show, and they've given us an extra hour and a half as well. So,
oh, excellent. So it's definitely going to be a world event, basically, at the Arnold. I mean,
exactly.
Very big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and for those people listening who don't know, they're probably wondering why would the winner of a show that's getting their pro card be competing in the Amateur World Championship? And, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is America is the only one with pros. Everyone else just kind of competes.
Everyone else just competes. America, we're the largest federation in the world, and we're the only federation that currently that has the amateur to pro system. I mean, we are in the process of working with other countries and starting something of that nature, but it's a slow moving process. But it was a slow moving process for us as well, you know. But it is something that other countries are looking at because they see that the system works.
Gotcha.
Because America truly does have overall the best pros out there that are competing in strongman.
Yeah, I'm looking at 2011. Anything new as far as just new things you want to alert the guys to or the fans as far as the world of strongman and the scheduling and things along those lines?
One of the new things we'll be back in Arkansas, which, Ryan, that was your first pro show. So we'll be back there, and we'll have, you know, actually bigger prize money than we had last year with some other, you know, surprises in store. And then we will not be at the Europas this year. This will be the first year that we will. Yeah, so that's going to be different because this is our first year not doing the Europas in at least 4 or 5 years. We're going to do the Platinum Plus or the Pro-Ams a little bit differently. We're looking at some other venues, such as moving out to some places in Texas. Also still in Florida, but we're negotiating with some people in Tampa as well as in Miami. And one of the decisions, you know, without getting into a political thing on it, is people that want to come and see their family members or just come and see strongman. One of the biggest complaints that I've had from some fans, or they have to pay an additional fee if and all they want to see is strongman. Well, we're looking at beans to where they're not going to have to pay, so that way it'll be a little bit something more to where the athletes can compete. Their family members don't have to worry about paying a gate just to get into the door.
Right.
I mean, we've been doing the aerobics, and I'm not saying that we'll never go back, but this we're just going to try it this year without doing it.
Well, hey, I mean, that's another bit of excitement, you know. New mm-hmm. new places, new events, new venues. That's always good.
Yeah.
Dion, you're going to be down in Texas, aren't you, in December?
Yes. I'll be so in Texas for, I know you guys think you're your own little world out there. The Republic of Texas or something of that nature.
The yeah, the Republic of Texas Strongest Man, yeah.
Yes. And then next week I will be at our very first ever strongman competition in Alaska.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it'll be the first time. So before, I believe we were in like, we've had competitions in 47 states. So we're adding Alaska to the map, which will be quite interesting.
Are the guys' hands going to be sticking to all the metal implements out there in the weather?
We're
you're
going
have to
be indoors
at the ready? Or
exactly, we'll be indoors, which they can probably, they might have the trick to handle the cold weather on that. Competing on the outside, I don't know, but
that's going to be great.
Yeah.
Next time we have you on, you're going to have to give us the Alaska recap.
Exactly. So it'll be, I mean, the weights right now are much lighter than what some of the strongman contests that you see on this side of America have. But it's the very first one, and a lot of new first time competitors. So that's great for the sport.
Well, that's awesome. It's good to see the sports kind of growing and spreading out to even more places that it's never been before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that'll conclude, you know, everything that we needed to know for Nationals coming up. You know, I guess maybe next week or the week after we'll have you back on to give us a little recap of some of the records that are being set at that contest and mm-hmm. talk about the new pros that are coming in.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on, Dion.
Thank you guys as well.
Dion, real quick,
night.
Want to mention your website?
Oh, yes. Dion, you can definitely follow us, you know, on Facebook or on one of the websites. The professional website is www.americanstrongman.com, and then the amateur website is www.nastrongman.com.
Well, thank you very much, Dion. We certainly appreciate you being on.
Thank you guys as well.
Well, Ryan, I got to admit, I'm kind of surprised to hear about the kind of the Europa bomb, I guess I'll call it. We'll have Europa Gate here on RX Power Hour. So what's kind of your take on that? I mean, you've competed so much in pursuit of that Platinum Plus level pro card, and most of those events tended to take place at Europa. So what do you think about that type of change?
Well, the Europa's always been a good venue since they started it. I think that was actually my first pro-am that I did about 2 years ago was at the Orlando Europa. And, I mean, they always have a pretty good crowd. You know, it's a nice place to go. Every place that they hold the Europas are great. I mean, they have great venues every time. The only downside to those particular contests is that I know part of the deal was they had to do a two-day event. Which, you know, I've spoken with Dion about it, the two-day event means you're not going to get as many of the top competitors. Reason being is, for most guys, I would say, other than the top two or three guys in the world, you're not living off strongman. It's not like bodybuilding where guys can make a lot of money, especially amateurs. There's almost no amateurs making money through sponsors or anything. So that means you're taking off, not only taking off work on a Friday to drive somewhere and compete on a Saturday, you're taking off a Thursday or even a Wednesday so you can go across country, compete for 2 days, you know, and you're talking plane tickets, days off, you know, everything. It gets expensive when you're not making any money from it and it's just for fun, really. So go ahead.
So even on my end, I know that it definitely gets more complicated having to basically load guys up, you know, for 2 days in a row. I would much rather, you know, a guy wakes up that day, we load him, we go from that point. Having to do the whole two-day thing, like you said, with travel mixed in, you know, just from a nutrition standpoint, definitely makes things more difficult on my end. So I'm thrilled to hear it.
Well, and it doesn't even mean that they're going to necessarily do a one-day show now, but at least they have the option, whereas before they couldn't. They had to, because it's a two-day expo, and they want the event going both days, you know, which is understandable. You know, and on top of that, I'm kind of psyched about the interview with Chris as well. Just, I mean, I'm coming close up to the meet that I signed up for, so I don't know if I'll be able to utilize his information right now, just because it's only about 4 weeks away, but it's good to know that you really don't have to change a whole lot with the West Side training to get the results.
Correct. And I know the big thing with you, Ryan, is you're a stickler. If you find something that someone you respect has created, like a Louis Simmons or Chris, I know that you tend to follow. You're not a tinker. And that, I think, was the most important aspect that I hope people take away from the interview with Chris, is that do some research, get the template out, follow the template. Unless you can outlift a Louis, you know, or guys along those lines, you know, that lift up there, don't be tinkering with shit, you know, but that's just my opinion.
Well, not necessarily don't tinker, because like you said, you got to have the variety and be willing to change, but if you're going to follow the program, I think you do need to try to stick with the template at least, and the tweaks would be minor, you know what I mean? But you definitely got to listen to your body. I know I try to follow it pretty regularly, but because of strongman events, I have to almost modify it completely. But for the average powerlifter, I think you could easily follow it pretty directly, you know. And on top of the book that Chris mentioned, I know that Elite Fitness has, or Elite FTS, that's a different website, has an ebook that is, I think they call it like basic training or basic program that goes into detail about that specific program also.
Excellent.
And do we want to get into who we're looking to have on next week? I mean,
we can go ahead and let folks in on it. Looks like next week we're going to have basically the Babe Ruth of deadlifting, Andy Bolton, on. That's a big deal for more reasons than basically you can count, in the sense that, A, Andy's in England, so we've got a whole time-constrained battle that we're doing. He's actually going to get up about 2 o'clock in the morning to do the interview for us, which is very, very cool on his part, to say the least. And Andy has a lot to offer. He's got a new training system that he definitely wants to go over with folks. But I really expect that to be a very interesting interview because, again, you talk about somebody who's basically achieved the impossible in the sport, which is kind of what the show's about. Andy Bolton, you're not really going to go beyond that.
Yeah, and for those wondering, we're not just going to talk about deadlift. He is the best, you know, I guess you would say he's the best deadlifter in the world. You know, he's got the record. And even though we just did a interview with Travis Ohrmeyer about deadlifting, you know, we will cover that topic, but we're going to cover all aspects of training with him as well.
Yeah, I know he's definitely in pursuit of a bench record right now. That's another thing he's after. So it should be a very interesting interview. So, and we certainly appreciate him going the extra mile to provide us an interview by getting up way before sunrise.
Yes, definitely. Well, I think that's another good show in the books, Nathan. Guess have to wait till next week and get our next guest.
The RX Power Hour is a presentation of RXMuscle.com. Tune in next week at the same time for another edition with Ryan Bracewell and Nathan Payton, only on RX Muscle.